The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
Now, Ed, when you're in charge of Phoenix FM, obviously, in the southern parts, etc., I bet over the course of the schedule, featuring some Dr. Hook or Dennis Le Carrière would be just essential, wouldn't it, really?
I wish. I wish it certainly would.
You know, it is, quite frankly. And then when you hear some of the current magic that has actually come from the appropriately titled album Post-Cool, which is just genius in itself, and also Post-Cool Live, we say we are in the hands of, as I said before in the run-up to the show, genius. Dennis, welcome officially to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. You know, with a build-up like that, though, man, I mean, it's so hard to live up to. But I'm glad you like the album. Yeah, I'm glad you like the title, too. I've had that title for a long time, Post-Cool, but I thought I had to live long enough to actually accurately use it.
It's not postmodern. It's post-cool. You know, literary
it's
fans.
Post-cool. What it means to me is I'm too old to worry about what's cool anymore. It's uncool for me to worry about what's cool at this point.
I hear where you're coming from, and I can now sense why our Nashville correspondent, Cameron Tilbury, was not only pleased but delighted to actually say, if it's Dennis Le Carrière, I'm happy to give up my regular slot on the show. I'll go in the second hour.
That's very nice. Yeah, I lived in Nashville for a long time. I was there for about 25 years. I wrote songs there and stuff. A lovely community. It's bigger now than ever, but I'm over here.
A bit of civilization never does any harm, Dennis. That's what
no,
I say.
That's true.
We've got a message from Jody Orton, erstwhile American Dream Team soul, and indeed former Midweek Drivette. She was very excited to see that you were on the guest list for the show tonight, and her mum is a huge fan. In fact, saw you in Newark a few years ago.
Okay.
And this is the important bit, Dennis. Jody was wondering if you could possibly say hello to Jody's mum and wish her happy birthday to Friday. She's currently about to fly to Fuerteventura, but she's listening online, so that's for Jody's mum, who's Pat. Would you like to give a big Dennis Le Carrière shout-out, as we say in the media radio, to Pat, a major
fan? I would. Hi, Pat. This is Dennis Le Carrière, and happy birthday for Friday. But, you know, you're going someplace lovely, and you know, so you're going to be doing better than all of us. So happy birthday, and send us all a gift.
You see, Fuerteventura, or indeed, Darlington Civic Theatre. It's a tough call. I don't know where we're going on this particular.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. If it was down to the weather.
always. Listen, let's move into some Le Carrière magic before we open it up to the team here, because, as I say, I mean, you know, Sylvia's Mother for me was a game changer in so many ways. You know,
was it?
The operator says 80 cents more or 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes.
Yeah, but you know something? People, kids don't even understand that now.
They don't.
Like, it doesn't cost any, you know, no, you don't have to put, you know, keep putting change into your mobile phone.
Is it true? I mean, Katie, it's a different world, you know. 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes, it's not going to happen, is it?
No.
Stephanie? No, and Grace?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Don't even know what we're talking about.
I should have been buying apps, and then everybody would have got it. But 40 cents to talk. Who understands that anymore?
Well, you know, we will get there. That's the important thing. Now, one of the little tunes, I mean, obviously it's up to yourself. We've got, obviously, I'm impressed with myself, which I think is wonderful from that point of view. But there's one of your recent sort of tunes, which I think is wonderful. Dance on Daddy's Feet.
Yes.
It's not suggesting Strictly Come Dancing that you should literally dance on Daddy's feet.
No, but it is the memories of a girl, you know, a woman who's grown up and working hard and living on her own, and once in a while she, you know, her memory goes back to when she used to put her little feet on her daddy's feet and he used to dance around the room. It's just pretty much a fond memory song, for a girl who's working hard.
I think it sort of, it epitomises what the late, great Harry Chapin would say as storybook radio, storybook audios, in all sorts of ways. If you'd be kind enough to stay with us, in fact, I'm declaring today officially Dennis Le Carrière Wednesday. We'll have...
More pressure.
Dance on Daddy's Feet. I would actually say it's impossible not to sway in a kind of emotive moment when you're actually listening to a Dennis Licorio song. Stephanie, what did you make of it? Dance on Daddy's Feet.
You got me a bit emotional there, actually. It's brought back some fond memories of where every New Year my granddad used to put me on his feet when I was a lot smaller and couldn't crush him. Oh. And he used to dance around this hall at New Year's Eve. So, yeah, lovely. Thanks for that.
Grace?
Yeah, I think I danced on my dad's feet until he just wouldn't let me anymore.
So the bunions were too much.
Yeah, I think I was just getting a bit too old for it, I'm afraid. But
Katie?
Yeah, I liked it. It was very mellow.
And you've just realised your mum also will have seen Dennis in concert.
Yes, in Cannock.
There we are. In Cannock. There we are. One for Sharon as well. And Ed, our music expert.
Always in for a bit of A major myself, and very flowing, very fluent and gentle. I think you said, Katie, didn't you? Gentle?
Mellow,
yeah.
But it was gentle as well.
I think it's thumbs up all round, Dennis.
Hey, great. You know, and for me, I was happy to know it sounded good over the phone, because that's how most people listen to music these days.
Well, the live shows continue ever onwards, because Stephanie is delighted as a Derbyshire lass that Dennis will be performing in Buxton.
So we've just heard. It's a very nice part of the country.
Yeah. The Opera House is a very nice venue, too. It's really cool.
Great news on that. Obviously, Darlington Civic. Sadly, the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, or indeed the various Lincoln, seem to be Dennis Licorio less. And I think that's a tragedy which needs to be put right as soon as possible, Dennis.
Yes. You know, I mean, I sing at every red light, my friend, just in case I've arrived somewhere. So it's not for lack of trying.
Now, in addition to obviously supporting, you've written for Bob Dylan, Crystal Gayle, BJ Thomas, Helen Reddy, Willie Nelson, Southside Johnny. Ah, yes, there is a happy connection there with our sister service.
Yes, hey, I've written with Southside Johnny, more importantly than for him. We've written together. Johnny's a friend of mine. So.
That's right. Southside,
you know, all those names, those were just, you know, happenstance. I mean, it's not like I actually was commissioned to write for these guys, you know, for any of those artists. They just found one of my songs that they liked, and it's always really rewarding. I mean, that's one of the best things about a songwriter, if you write for yourself, to know that another artist will actually, you know, commit a certain amount of time on their album or in their show.
Although,
doing your material is really flattering.
Strangely enough, I'm not sure whether Chris Stein and Debbie Harry will be that pleased about One Direction's cover of One Way or Another, but it is for Comic Relief.
They'll be fine. They'll put another wing on their house or build a second pool or something. I think they'd be, you know, if you told me that One Direction did a cover of Dance on Daddy's Feet, I would be, first of all, I would rush to hear it. And second of all, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, I think it's flattering no matter who does it, you know what I mean? And I think you'd have to be a little stodgy to say, well, I wish they hadn't done that song, because it is an appreciation of your material. Yeah.
And indeed, it's great stuff there. Katie, questions from yourself.
As an avid fan of rock music, I'm interested in what artists you like at the minute.
Oh, you know, I listen to a lot of different stuff. I'm trying to remember, you know, some of the newer stuff. I haven't been listening in the last few weeks and stuff, but there's a lot of great music now. It's just a little harder for me to find, because I don't listen to the radio a lot. I mean, unless I'm in the car somewhere, I don't really find it. But there's a lot of, you know, I like bands. And when I say bands, I don't mean five guys standing next to each other dancing. I mean bands, guys who play. They've changed the usage of the word band these days. But a band that knows what they want to sound like, you know, and I like things with lyrics that tell some stories, and maybe you can tell from my writing. But who do you listen to now?
Blur. I've been listening to Blur lately. Two Door Cinema Club. You probably would. Do you know him?
Yeah. I mean, I'm
don't
not...
Don't be so surprised. He's so cool.
You know, you're listening to Blur because they're back. They're not really actually a new band. They're just kind of back, you know.
They're helping me get through this stressful time at uni.
Actually, Dennis, you might be able to help Katie, because Katie's got a presentation that comes up on Monday at the University of Lincoln, and she gets very concerned about the nerves and the standing up on stage, etc. I said, you just go with it. Dennis, as a seasoned performer, not that you'll ever have suffered from nerves, but as somebody from Union City, New Jersey in the US, what advice would you give Katie in terms
about
of
what about stage fright?
Yeah, exactly.
Being nervous. I get nervous before I go out there, but I'll tell you what, the best advice I ever got was from a stage director who said, you know, it's always going to be an ambivalent position you're in when you walk out in front of people, because it's unnatural. But if you just don't try to, until you get out there, don't try to think of everything you're going to do. You know, when I have a show, when I'm planning a tour, I'm in a state because I'm trying to think of everything. And when I'm about to do, like, my first show of the tour, I'm standing in the wings trying to think of every single thing I want to say and everything I want to sing. And the most useful thing is to go out and just take it word and sentence and paragraph and song and point, if you're making a speech or something, just take it point at a time. And if there's humor in your thing and somebody laughs in the audience, or if you feel like you've made a point, that'll bolster your confidence, and you just keep rolling on there. But the most important thing is don't stand getting ready to go on and try to think of everything you're going to do, because you just know how you're going to start and carry through, and usually the people you're talking to will help you get through if you're doing your job. And that's the best advice I've ever had, is don't try to, you know, about the whole thing. Just go out and take it a bit at a time.
Exactly. Ed?
Yeah, is there anything that you'd like to do musically that you've never done? Maybe start again on an entirely different style or instrument?
Not a different... Well, funnily enough, I always wanted to play keyboards when I was a kid, but you could borrow somebody's guitar, you know? You could never borrow anybody's piano. Now you could, because everything's portable. But I probably wished I would have learned to play keyboards. But, you know, I've always been the kind of guy that... I'm pretty organic about that stuff. I like to see what happens next. I mean, about a year and a half or so ago, I released this book of poems and cartoons that I did, that I've been doing for years. I've always written this stuff and put it on my blog, but I never really thought of it as part of what I do. And and then, you know, I put a bunch of poems on my blog just because I didn't know what else to do with them. And I got an email from a publishing house that said, we specialize in poetry and we love your stuff. Do you want to put it out as a collection?
Now, you see, that definitely is cool. And a round of applause, I think.
No, but you know what I mean?
Yay!
Thanks, but you know, I had very little to do with it except that I wrote it all without a purpose, you know. And then it became purposeful after a while. And I'm pretty much the kind of guy that likes to leave at least the next page blank a little bit to see where you can fill it in. I don't really worry when it looks like there's a dry period coming up, because that means you have room to fill it in. I think I got that because when I was on the road with Dr. Hook, we were out on the road 300 days a year, and nothing else ever happened. I was off the road for about 2 years after our farewell tour before people stopped saying to me, so are you back for a few days? And I'd say, no, I live here. I have a phone number. You can call me. You know, so I don't really try to rush anything up. So, yeah, you know, I'm always looking for the next thing. I'm not real big on nostalgia. I'm always looking for the next thing.
In fact, if I can quote your good self, Dennis, from Point Zero, here I am at Point Zero with my whole life in my sack. Been a while since my last visit, but I knew that I'd be back.
Yeah, well, Point Zero is, you know, last year I had a weird year, a couple of personal things, you know, lost a couple of really good friends in America suddenly, and had a... I've been living over here for the last several years, but last year I decided I wanted to really put it in place and do a residency thing, and so I had to do a bunch of paperwork to get my status right. And while we were doing that paperwork and all that administration stuff, I couldn't work. I didn't have a work permit. So last year I really just floated through last year thinking, oh, what's happening? Because you don't like to leave it for too long, you know. But so now that's why it's Point Zero. That's why it's the Point Zero for me, because a lot of things that happened in the last year and a half have kind of leveled me, brought me ground level, and so you take it from here.
I like it. DennisLeCorrier.com. Tour dates all up there in all sorts of ways. Obviously, thanks to Heather at the Darlington Civic and the team, and Judy, obviously, for setting the whole thing up. We've got three final questions for you at this particular stage, Dennis.
Okay.
First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Madrid Drive this evening?
Have I had a what?
A reasonably interesting telephonic link. Has it been okay?
Oh, one of those how did we do things? Yes, it was absolutely wonderful. I would do this every day if you like.
Well, I steady on. I mean, you know. But the critical question is, can we look forward to welcoming you back on the show in the very near future?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would be deeply hurt if it didn't happen that way.
I think we'll get that sorted. Now, the next thing is going to be, because we will be featuring at least two more tracks throughout the course of the evening. I've decided that now. I'm impressed with myself. That's a classic go on from that point of view. But also from a nostalgic point of view, from the days of Dr. Hook, Better Love, Next Time.
Okay.
I'll let you make the decision. Which one do you think we should actually go now to head over to New York City with Carol Goodman to talk more about her exciting writing?
So you're going to be playing both, but you want to know which one to play now?
Exactly.
Okay, well, play Better Love next time, because that'll take you back, and then you can take them forward again to the present.
Hey, a round of applause for Dennis Licorio. So fantastic stuff. Just one of the whole cornucopia of delights, I think you'll say, of Dr. Hook, of course, and Dennis Le Corrier. You didn't realise that he'd actually done that, did you, Stephanie?
I did not. Mm, I'm very impressed. Now I have a face to the song.
Precisely. We like to sort of move that forward. Now, dive in if you dare. Something we actually focused on a few weeks ago when we went also to upstate New York to actually feature an ace author who's produced so many marvellous, delightful things, including The Lake of Dead Languages, Seduction of Water, The Ghost Orchid, and, of course, one which you're currently beginning to look at, which is Incubus, the first in the series, Stephanie. Is that not correct?
Yes. Unfortunately, it is sat on my bookshelf waiting for my uni work to get finished.
Well, that's we'll get that sorted.
I've seen the cover. That's as far as I've got.
You've seen the cover. Fine. Okay, well, that's genius to actually sort of welcome Carol Goodman back to the show. Carol Goodman, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on a second time.
Oh, I say this is part two of at least a trilogy, because next week, of course, we have our historical legend Karen Maitland will be joining us in the studio, and we can sort of cross the Atlantic from that perspective onwards. Shall we go for the random page numbers to start off with, just to sort of set the scene again? Grace, would you like to give me a page number between 1 and 334, please?
222.
222. Okay, this is hopefully sort of set the scene for that. We'll eventually sort of be moving into a whole range of scenarios. So that's 222 for Water Witch. So let's see how this actually sort of translates. I crept on. I could tell by how small the revolutions had become that we were near the centre of the circle. A few more turns and we were at the six-petaled flower at the centre of the labyrinth. It was filled with a twilight blue mist that seethed and roiled like a storm cloud. Veins and sparks of lightning crackled within it. I was terrified to step inside it. "What's in there?" I asked Brock. "Something you have to face in order to be free. You have to go alone." His voice faded. I wanted to turn and look for him, but I didn't. I stepped into the roiling eye of the hurricane, where it was a calm and clear summer night. I stood on a grassy lawn beneath a twilight blue sky, surrounded by the flickering light of fireflies. The place tugged at my memory, the smell of smoke and night-blooming flowers riding the warm summer air, the thick blue dark pinpricked by pulsing fireflies, the damp grass beneath my bare feet. My bare feet? I looked down and saw my pale feet, half buried in grass, only they looked smaller than my feet. I wriggled my toes. Definitely my feet. Then a noise caught my attention, a humming that blended with the cicadas and tree frogs, but wasn't cicadas and tree frogs. I looked up, and up, as though I had shrunk and the world had grown taller around me. A cloaked figure towered above me, arms raised to the crescent moon. As I stared in amazement, the figure took hold of the moon and drew it down toward her. I gasped, and the figure spun round, robes billowing in the warm air, wafting the smell of smoke and something else toward me, something bitter. Then there was a flash of silver as a sickle knife arced down toward me. What did you think, Katie?
Sounds very dramatic.
It is very dramatic.
Well, you've left us on the knife's edge.
What? Literally. I'm looking at the weather outside the studio today, Carol, and it could almost be that. You know, we could be heading into a different dimension. The whole sort of areas of the fray. Ed, you wish to read more, don't you? You wish to get hold of a copy of Water Witch.
It was the combination of the hum that you were talking about, with the sound of the cicadas?
Cicadas, yes. Grasshoppers.
Ah.
Yeah. It's an American thing.
I love it.
those big, I don't know if you have them in England, those big sort of beetle-like bugs that come out in August and make that buzzing noise. Do you have them in England?
We call them grasshoppers. They're smaller and more perfectly formed. But that's by the by. You'll see this when you come up to Scotland, Carol. You know, I mean, if you're coming up to Scotland in April, you might just be in time for what we call midges over here.
Midges.
They're little pesky little insects that bite you. I don't know how you expect to concentrate on your writing when you've got those midges all over the place. Never mind. Anyway.
I'll look forward to seeing those.
Precisely. precisely. Stephanie, as an English student, English and journalism, any questions you want to put to Carol Goodman about life, the universe, and how, quite rightly, you say love the Twilight series, this is better than Twilight, this takes Twilight and hits it into a cocked hat, quite literally.
Very nice. Well, looking at that passage that we've just heard there, it was very sensory. We've got sight, we've got smell, what we could hear, how our toes felt in the grass. Do you think that's very important to draw the reader in and make them feel they're part of the book?
Well, that's what it's what I do to draw myself into the scene, so I assume that the reader is going to need that as well, to have something to feel like they're actually there. So I always try to keep going back and imagining what it feels like. And if it's something especially related to a childhood memory, which this spoiler alert turns out to be for Callie, I think what we remember are our smells and you know, angles of light. So I try to concentrate on those.
I'm pleased that we've avoided zombies so far in this whole system, because it seems to me... it seems to me, Carol, that you know, in so many ways we seem to be having a zombie overload now. We've got your Walking Dead, we've got the World War Z, we've got a whole range of other factors coming through.
Even a zombie love story.
Precisely.
Bodies.
You Pride and Prejudice and zombies, it's a step too far. That's what I say. I can take Seth Graham Smith doing Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer.
Right.
But really, you know, zombies, it's not on. Grace, your views on zombies?
Sure. Let the zombies. I thought the Warm Bodies film looked really good. Mm. So
it was actually I liked Warm Bodies too.
Yeah.
I went with my daughter, and it was cute. Because I think it turned the whole zombie trend on its head and made fun of it gently. So.
But so does Paranorman. It doesn't necessarily turn around and say this is what the whole essence of it all is about.
Better, yeah. Actually. Yeah, I have not been tempted. I often ask my daughter, who's a big comic book fan, and comic books often predict trends, like it had the zombies first. I say, well, what's coming next? And she told me hobos.
Mm. Yeah.
But I have yet to incorporate them into my particular universe.
There's always the littlest hobo. I mean, what a lovely dog he had, you know? I mean, TV genius.
I'm not quite sure how to go about that, so. I don't think I'll be doing zombies anytime soon.
Good to hear it, Carol. You know, that's the important thing. Ed, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I find it very difficult to get into books, Carol, and how do you sort of write with that in mind, that there are some people who really struggle with the first few pages, like me?
Oh, well, I try to make something in those first few pages tempting enough to get even the more reluctant reader involved, usually with some kind of something happening that you'll want to know what happens next. Mm. I do think of that, and I have a lot of people who read my first draft, so they'll tell me if they're drawn in right away, yeah. And if they're not, sometimes it's a matter of skipping to a next scene or so.
The thing I like, Carol, about your particular writing is it does actually grab you. In fact, I'll quote from Publishers Weekly, in which we actually have a line which says, you deliver the goods that your fans expect in an atmospheric and fast-moving gothic story. We're talking about The Demon Lover, written, curiously, by Juliet Dark. You see, twice the fun when you got Carol Goodman. It's not just Carol Goodman, it's Juliet Dark as well. Genius.
In America, the books are published under my name in the UK, which I'm actually really happy about.
Well, was there a publisher's suggestion to say, no, you're doing gothic romance, where we want to have a suitably entitled nom de plume, it can't be Edgar Allan Poet, because that's actually gone. So, you know, let's go for Juliet Dark.
Another writer, actually Anita Bruckner, called one of her characters, that she says she writes under a more thrusting name. So Juliet Dark is my more thrusting name. Mm. Yes, it was a publisher's suggestion that the Carol Goodman books, were a little different from this new turn into fantasy. I actually felt that the turn to fantasy that I've taken with Demon Lover and Water Witch is a continuation of what I was doing with my previous book that I had always had.
I mean, certainly if we're looking at Black Swan Rising, which obviously led to the movie and all the connections within the whole system, I mean, that had a lot of fantasy elements. It kind of went from a fairly straightforward scenario to really sort of that whole notion of a doppelganger, the evil twin, a whole range of things from that point of view.
Right. So, yeah, so I was moving into that kind of, into that fantasy world already. It was more... the fairy tales became more and more real. So I thought it was a continuation, and my British publisher felt that it was still a Carol Goodman book. So I'm glad that they're published under Carol Goodman, but, you know, I guess I get to be, you know, a few different people in America.
Well, yeah, you see, it's a big country, obviously. You need to sort of cover the territories. That's the important thing. Brace, any other questions, any queries, any thoughts?
Can I just ask, when you're writing the book, does it take you a while, or are you quite naturally, like, you can just write
ages and ages? Knock off a few hundred pages in it, Carol? In fact, when we leave this conversation tonight, Carol, I'll go write another few chapters.
I should, but I probably won't. And it's an earlier year, so I probably should get back to work. It really depends. The Demon Lover actually took me the shortest time that any book had ever taken me. I had been writing for about 10 years. I've been writing a book a year. It took me usually about 9 months to write a book. Suddenly, with The Demon Lover, I wrote it in 4 months. And around the house, we said I was possessed by the demon
lover.
Well,
you see, this was the point I was going to make, because it's when you start tapping into that whole unseen world of the supernatural, you know, you could simply be channeling stuff. You know, who knows what could be happening.
I'll tell you honestly, it felt like that. It felt when I started writing The Demon Lover that I just had to write it faster, and I did. And when I finished it, of course, I looked around and saw that I hadn't cleaned my house in 4 months, and, you know, my daughter's
application. You can't let things like that get in the way, you know. It's like sort of stopping for food and drink. When you're moved by the spirit, you just write it, you know.
It's like
Stephanie and her dissertation next year. It's amazing.
Well, my daughter's college applications were late. I suddenly sort of woke up and went, oh, I guess I should pay attention to what's going on. And I said to my daughter after that, I said, well, just because you can write a book in 4 months doesn't mean you always should. Since then, I've been trying to decide whether, you know, sometimes I write faster, sometimes I think it's better to take a little bit more time. But it's somewhere between 4 months and 9 months, I guess, to write a first draft. Of course, then I end up writing 3 or 4 more drafts, because I have editors who are good and who go back and make me go back and hopefully make, by the time it gets to the bookstore, it's been...
Reaches perfection. That's the crucial thing. That's the critical aspect.
The kinks of, sometimes I don't think it ever is going to reach that, but...
It can approach it, Carol. That's the key thing. That's what we need to look for. Ed, quick question. Is Tiffany actually in Holland?
She is, and she's ready for us.
We are. It's from me. It's a bit of production on-air meeting there. You know, I'm sure the Pack Hollywood people would appreciate us. But, Carol, first of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today?
Oh, wonderful. It's the height of my day. It's great.
The next question is kind of already answered, because next week we have not just yourself, but also in the studio, historical genius that is Karen Maitland. Will you be actually up for joining us live pretty much the same time?
I'd love to. I love her books. I was so excited when I realized that this is Lincoln, and that's where she's from.
Exactly so. We might talk about your Scottish experience upcoming as well, as far as that's concerned. Carol Goodman, for the moment. A round of applause for Carol Goodman, I think. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.